I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. It's a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we will visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as new Mainers. Today, my guest is Rabia Ismail. Rabia is from the small country of Djibouti, right at the Horn of Africa. Djibouti, with a D, is a relatively peaceful country about the size of New Hampshire, with a population of 800,000 people. Welcome to New Mainers Speak, Rabia.
Thank you.
So what can you tell us about your life in Djibouti? What was it like for you growing up there, and when did you leave?
I live in Djibouti, the capital. They call Djibouti City. And I grew up there with my family. I have two brothers and my mom and dad. And I had a good life because my father was working in a private business with my uncle. And my mother was working also in a restaurant. And we grew up there in a town called Carton, is the name of the town that I grew up. And then I went to the college, and I went to the university, and then I have a pretty life. And then and after that, when I graduate from the university, I just get a job. I was working in a private company, so I was in the human resource department of that company. And then I have a lot of friends there and family, so it is like a special life, comfortable.
Yes, more comfortable than most of your countrymen, is that correct? You are privileged in your country.
Yes, because everyone. You know the society that you come from, you know the community, you know the culture, you know the religion, the tradition that you have there. So when you are when you are outside, it's like a very, very different. And you feel it inside when you go out from your country. Exactly.
You feel far away from your country here.
Sure, from my family, especially my family.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, and a friend.
I understand that education is very important in Djibouti.
Yes.
And you all spend 20% of your annual funds to support schools.
Yes. But I think the people there is more educated. But except we have a small university. We only have one in the capital. And even those who are outside the capital, they come for this university because there is not another one. So, and it is education, we do have it, but it's limited. It is up to bachelor degree. And when you get your bachelor degree, there is no master degree, there is nothing else. So they told you to find a job, and you have to find it.
What do you do about physicians and people of higher educational levels? Do you have to go away and become a physician and come back to Djibouti?
Yes, sure. When they get their high school, there is some student that they got a grant or something like that. So they go outside, Tunisia. They go in Cuba for medicine. They go also in Morocco. They go in Senegal. They go outside. And even in French. And they do their study and they come back home, but pretty sure when they come back home, they cannot have the job that the experience that they had. For example, I have
because there's less infrastructure. You go away and you train, you come back and you can't work.
You
at that
cannot
level.
Work because we don't have industry. Imagine those who have experience on factory. They cannot, when they come, there is no industry. They cannot find a job. We do have a small hospitals, and imagine when there is 100 students when they come back home, and they cannot find positions. Even they do a master or they do a doctorate in medicine, they cannot even find it. For example, I do have my brother, the older of me. He went to Tunisia. He was one of the graduates. He got his high school diploma. and they sent him, they gave him a grant. And he went to Tunisia. He did like engineering on chemical process. And when he came back home, what kind of chemical that he can do? There is nothing. We don't have petroleum. We don't have anything. So he is like, right now, he's like a teacher in private, in everywhere.
In a private school?
Yes, in private school. Mm-hmm. So, and even in the public, to be accepted, and there is more a lot of condition, and it is very hard to find a job there.
You were saying earlier that getting a job there is a little different than getting a job here.
Yeah.
Because there, there's a bit of who you know.
Yes.
And you can also be negatively associated if your parents have been political.
Yeah.
Then there's almost no chance you'll get a job.
Yes, that's true. Because we do have tribes inside our society. And we do have also different tribes. Like there is some Maisa tribe, there is Afar tribes. And those different tribes have different mentality, you know. So when the dominant tribes are hiring the people, or when the governments or in the public sector, they hiring people, and they have a bad system. They do have a system like who know who. If you are from the family that they know it, they're going to give you the job. Mm. But if you are not, so they tell you, we don't have job. From where you hear that we have a job, that's what the mostly we get, like answer. But here, you go for a job, looking for a job, and you do the application, and then you pass an interview, and then you get the job. That's the kind of system that we would like to have in my country, really.
More fair and...
Yes, more fair and more legal.
Even more legal.
That's true. Yeah, and it is a little bit like inside, so... We like to clean first inside, and then because if you try to hire who know who, what about who know what?
That's important.
Yes,
what you know.
Yes, because exactly we do have like a lot of disease because there is no water. There is no. We have a poverty who highest and highest each years, and then the people have like most of the people. The hospital like have tuberculosis. Yes, a lot. Imagine that when doctors from outside come in, those who are graduate, who are citizen, who born in Djibouti, and they told them, oh, you are a doctor, yes, I do have my doctorate degree. And then they told him after that, we know that we have the doctorate degree, but we don't have place for you. And then they're going to hire somebody who's come from a campaign or I don't know, but who has no degree at all, but who has family that they know it.
Oh, that must be extremely frustrating.
Yes, and then who gonna treat the patient? That's the question. And then there's a lot of who die without nothing. And that is not fair.
People who die with nothing.
Yes.
Yes.
Without treatment, without equipment, without nothing. And when you see it, you get shocked.
I bet it is shocking.
Yeah.
In Djibouti right now, you're experiencing a 6-year drought. And that equals famine. People have sold their livestock. And there isn't a lot of farming. For people who are unfamiliar with the Djibouti landscape, yeah. As I was, you know, like a week ago, it looks a bit like arid canyons of Nevada, if you're familiar with American geography, and yet it's on the sea, very close to Yemen. The country of Djibouti is almost surrounded by seas and then on land by Ethiopia. And Eritrea,
yes,
and Somalia.
Yeah, too.
So they're all neighbors, so if you are unfamiliar with it, you can place it on your mental map. So what did school look like in your hometown? And had the teachers gone away to be trained too, or had they been at local university?
First of all, the school before 1999 and all of this, like school, we do have like four Reagan teacher, and it was pretty good in education. But right now, they make a mess. and they hire like those who have a bachelor or those who have a high school degree and doesn't have any training on being teacher. So what they're going to transmit? They transmit nothing. They do the lesson like it is like when you take a paper of and then you read in front of the students, and then the students, if they ask you a question or tell you, oh, I don't understand, can you please explain me this, and they say, well, you don't have to, so just to read, and then you're gonna take the exam.
So the teachers aren't like taking that much responsibility.
Yes, they are not. Pretty sure, I am sure 100% that they are not training. They are not training at all. So they hire him, and then that's it. They told him, take the book, and then do your job. And they have no choice.
The
life, yeah, and the life is so, so difficult and so expensive. So they do need a job. So they do.
Wow.
Yeah.
So tell me how you decided to come to Maine.
I decided to come to Maine. First, I decided to come to America. I didn't even know that I will be in Maine. But I found a close family here. That's why I came to Maine. But my project was to go outside the country because I couldn't support it. I am like my family is one of a business family, so they do have a problem with the government, so they sell all of our lands, houses, and even the cars. So we give up our businesses and all, so I was the only one who was working at that time because my brother was outside. And it was hard to get 100, like it is like 500 an amount. $500 amount, mm-hmm. And then fear for a family, whereas the life is very, very expensive. And I couldn't even sometimes get things that I needed. I say, oh, I get my salary today, and I spend it all. And then the family needed it. What you can do? Nothing. And there is also, my family didn't have a public health, because my father was working in a private, and we did have like a registration book, mm-hmm. But when we ran off of that business, we didn't even have, and it was very, very expensive to go in a public hospital, and then the pay fees, we couldn't even afford it. So I say I cannot leave it like that, and even more than this, they thought that we have a relation with my uncle who ran away from the country, and then they were checking everything, and then they came from nothing. So I say, that is not my life.
In a way, your family didn't have an opportunity to support itself.
To live inside, yes.
Because of your political connections.
Connection,
because
yeah.
You had a private business.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah.
You are listening to WMPG, Southern Maine Community Radio, broadcasting from USM. I'm Kate Manahan, and this is New Mainers Speak. If you're just joining us, welcome. Today I'm having a conversation with Rabia Ismail, originally from Djibouti, which is bordered by Ethiopia, Eritrea, and Somalia. So food in your country has become an issue. Part of the reason that $500 a month can't support your family is because my understanding is that the food costs double each year.
Yes.
6 years into a drought, people don't have the resources. There's nothing to sell to buy the food.
Yes.
And so many people are leaving Djibouti for destinations all over the world. Is the population in Djibouti decreasing steadily?
No, it increased, contrary, opposite. Because we do have immigrants. We do have immigrants who come from Ethiopia. Because they ran away also.
Ethiopia?
And yes, mm-hmm. We do have immigrants from Somalia who have a problem also. We do have from Yemen too. So the population increase and increase more. That's why they say even people, because we are like 700 or 800 like that. Like citizen, yes, uh-huh. 1,000. So when we count with the immigrant, we are like right now 120. A million or 20, yeah.
So roughly the size of the population of the state of Maine.
Yes, mm-hmm. And then they don't even go to the district or there, but they just come in into the capital. And then there is a lot for the capital will be full of people. And then sometimes you will be, you don't like to go outside to just to go around or see, because there is a lot of illegal immigrant who come in from outside, and you get feared. And sometimes you get fear.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you get afraid, so you cannot even go out at night, at nighttime. It's not like before.
You're having a culture
change
with all those immigrants.
Yes, that's true.
That's interesting. They must be in dire straits to leave a country
to
go to a country that's having a problem with food.
And right now when I called to my family and I told them how is the life like that, I say, oh, you know how one tomato costs? And I say, no, it's 100. Yeah. Oh, my God. It's like $5.
$5 for one tomato now.
One tomato now. Imagine that you need how many?
Yes.
For a week or 2 weeks or a month.
No, because wonder $500 couldn't feed a family.
Yes, and the system in here, you can get your salary like a week or 2 weeks like that. But there, you can get a month. So you have to wait until the next month to get your salary.
Yes.
And buy something for your food.
That's a long time to go between paychecks.
Yes.
Yeah.
Between paychecks to another, yeah.
What? How do you find the food situation here? We seem to have food everywhere here.
Yes. And ever there is a free food.
Free food everywhere.
Yes, there
too.
Is free food. If you here, like, the thing is that I like more is when you feel angry, you can go outside and there is homeless. Then you can eat it free. There is also weekly that you can go to the church. You can get whatever you want. It's like food. It is like we don't have that kind in my country. There is no homeless. There is no also church. There is no, even the mosque don't do that. So it is very, very different.
There is a lot of aid that comes into your country through WFP, right? The World Food Program?
Yes, that's true.
But that, I imagine most of that is at refugee camps?
Yes, for refugee camps. We do hear about that, but we don't see the act that they do. The way that they make distribution for the food, it is so bad. Because they don't give for the people who need it. But there is some employees inside who take it inside to the house. So if you see, there is a town called Balbala. It is a little bit far away from the capital, so that's why they say Balbala. And the houses there, even the chicken in the United States cannot live inside.
Oh.
And there is no electricity, there is no water, there is nothing. It's so dirty. Even the floor, your foot cannot touch it. Because you see, if I touch it, there is a disease I can. Mm-hmm. Or if I touch it, there is a virus or microbe, bacteria that I can get it. So when you see the WFP, the food programs, or there is also others who foreigners who give, sometimes comme le monnaie, like American camp, also give some gifts. But the things that they give to the wrong hand.
Mm.
So when they give to the wrong hand, they cannot make a good distribution.
So the food falls into the wrong hands.
To the wrong hands.
And then it doesn't get to the people in the greatest
need. Yes, and even if you go to the Google and click it, living or houses in Djibouti or house Balbala is, you cannot even wash it.
You can't see
it. You can't see it.
It's too hard to look.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So how has your life changed since you came to the United States?
First of all, the way that I'm living right now, even I am living alone without my family, because it's not easy. It changed a lot, because I am happy first to get a job. in being a year here, a year and a half. So I couldn't even imagine that when I applied for asylum, then I was like waiting for a month to get a work permit. So
8 months?
Like 5 months. And then after that, it goes through and then they're going to give it to you. So I got my work permit on December. So, and after a few months, I got a job.
And you worked nights?
At night shift,
on a parts assembly line?
Yeah, had ADEX on production line, yeah. And they call matrix department.
The matrix department.
Yes. And I go, when I come back in the morning, sometime I go to school. And also I go evening to school. And it's not even easy. But I'm happy to get salary to pay my food, my rent, and even send sometimes some money to my family. So I'm so happy.
That's beautiful. Yeah, you've been here 1 year.
Yeah, and a half.
1 year and a half.
Yes.
You've gotten yourself a job.
Yes.
More education through Portland
Adult Ed. Yes, Adult Ed. So I am in high school diploma right now. So I will be finished on December. Oh. Even I do have my high school back home, I have to fill up some credit in English language and some other credit.
Sure, so. And your bachelor's degree is in foreign language?
Foreign language, yeah.
Has that come in pretty handy here as you learn a new language?
You know, when I come here, I just, like the second month, I come here on October, on November, December, I went to SMCC. I didn't even know that the college cost very much. I passed the test and I succeeded it. And they told me to transcribe your degree. And I didn't even have a money. So I say, okay. And then they told me to pay a 20 fee to sign up for registration. And I did. And I took like business administration. And I all planned it all. But after that, they told me that they're going to... You have to pay fees like international students, so I couldn't afford it. I say no.
Very expensive.
I am like right now asylum seeker, so they told me to wait your work permit and all to be like a minor.
So you started at SMCC, but it was too expensive as an international student.
Yeah, I couldn't. I just paid the 20 fees to go in, and I was just planning to start, but the fees, I was like, oh, I don't even have money.
Well, you're smart to find a way to get education through Portland Adult Ed while you're working and able to save money and send it home, too.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm so lucky. Yeah.
What is your dream for what you might accomplish here?
First of all, my dream is to get my asylum, to be like a minor, to provide more for this community who give me more opportunity and help and give them so back a lot of, and I also have a hope to go back to school to continue my study and to go to college, and I would like to to take the specialty in health department and like health management. Yes. Mm-hmm. And maybe in the future, go back to my country, not now, because now I don't have a choice to go back. So maybe in my country, go back to my country and then change a little bit the system of who know who. And maybe take a part of put in a system of who know what. That's my hope. That's my hope.
Well, yeah. I'm delighted you're here. You're a delightful person to know. I wish everyone could see you today.
Yeah.
Actually, they can if they go on the website. And you could see Rabia in her traditional outfit from Djibouti. She's absolutely beautiful with scarf and dress.
Thank you.
And, she's brought a little bit of traditional music for us to close with here today. Yeah. Could you introduce that music for us?
Okay. Is the first one? Oh, okay, the Harimadi. Okay, it names Harimadi, and it is our traditional dance. And we do have that kind of dance, like when there is a ceremony, when there is a marriage, or when there is a when people are feeling like they would like to be together, and this is a traditional dance. And whenever that we have like a party or something like that, so we do have that kind of dance. Even when we on 27 June, it is like
Independence Day.
So this is the kind of the dance that we have.
Oh, good. So you'll get a nice little sample of what the traditional music of Djibouti sounds like.
And the dance too. Yeah.
You have been listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and I want to give thanks to my guest, Rabia Ismail, for joining me here today.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I wish you well as you continue to work, learn English, and make life for yourself here in Portland.
Yes.
You bring so much to our community.
Yeah.
And thank you for listening. Please join us each Sunday from noon to 12:30 for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you would like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainersspeak.com. Up next is Cruz del Sur with Victoria, right here on WMPG.
Africa gets canalo, we could have a high, Ugadigay Telkena, Ebai Negergari, Gedigi or Setka, Navada Goliselio, Minimada Garatemba, Oran, Oran, Oraniga Gutone.
Yalla ta samina garsiye.